Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, it's been a minute. As you can tell, we have not lost a step. We still remember everything about how to do this. How are you doing?
It's going swell. Haven't recorded in about 6 weeks. I think the last podcast we recorded was about Bill O'Brien getting hired at Boston College.
Yeah. No, I remember that. Like it was yesterday or 6 weeks ago.
We knew that once producer Scott had a kid, this would go to hell in a handbasket with our offseason recordings. Lo and behold, that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
Congrats to Scott and my sister on their new addition. Everything went well. Fantastic news. Mm-hmm. I have a nephew now. I've become an uncle since last time we recorded.
That's the real win here.
That's, yeah, big news there. I am keeping my job at SI. That's also big news.
That's a saga that started and has ended since the last time we recorded, I believe.
Yeah, well, the brunt of it, yeah. I got laid off officially in January. They gave us like our 90-day notice, and then it was just kind of on pause. And then over the last month or so, it has been very turbulent. So I am officially sticking around at SI. I signed an agreement with a new publisher to keep writing, which is great. So that's something that was really stressful in my personal life that's been resolved since the last time we recorded. So that's great.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. And now we're here to talk about our podcast potentially disintegrating because Clemson is trying to leave the ACC. So now I have stress in my podcast life, Joey.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I was struggling to remember if anything has happened that's meaningful in those 6 weeks, you know, that we needed to talk about. But I think you're right. We should probably talk about the potential upcoming demise of the ACC, which, yeah, we took another step towards in the last few weeks. As mentioned, that's worth noting. Number one is that Clemson has officially filed suit against the ACC, basically kind of piggybacking on the lawsuit with Florida State that Florida State already filed against the ACC. I believe that was before the season started. What was that, August, maybe, that they did that? Clemson filed suit, basically challenging, once again, kind of challenging the grant of rights. I think the real crux of the argument that Clemson was making is that the agreement that they made was that they only granted their rights to the ACC during the time in which the ACC is under contract with ESPN. And there was, I guess, a discovery in the last, I don't know, a few weeks, months, whatever, that the ACC's contract with ESPN, we've been working on the assumption that it goes through 2036, when in fact there's like a little out point, I guess, in 2026 where they could choose to renegotiate the contract. We do not know the details of that really almost at all beyond what I've just stated here. But Clemson basically saying, well, that's actually the point where we are no longer beholden, you know, we've no longer granted our rights to the ACC. We'll see if that holds up in court, Mike.
It's an interesting argument.
I'm no lawyer. I wish I were, because I'd probably be getting rich working this case right now, because this is just, if nothing else, this is a win for billable hours, by all means. So
I mean, Alex Kircher from Split Zone Duo put it pretty bluntly when he said, there's no way Clemson even believes this argument, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's The number of lawsuits that you have seen in your life of somebody suing someone for another reason, you're just like, is that a valid law? Like, that's going to get thrown out the minute a judge sees it, right? Like, this almost feels a little bit like a version of, like, and I saw a comparison to this on Twitter. It was like, if I sell my house and then I come back like 8 years later and realize, like, well, if I'd waited till now, I could have sold it for more. So I want it back. It's like, that's not how any of this works, by the
way. It's a great analogy. Like, it would have been great to negotiate a bigger media deal before the SEC and the Big Ten did, like, before the boom of television money in college football. You mm-hmm. signed it at the last boom, but now there's so much money in television revenue in the sport. I mean, it's legitimately unprecedented. And, you know, I think the ACC, under old Commissioner John Swofford, thought they were locking in a pretty good deal, and then they made the deal for, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 years or whatever it was, and now they're in a position where they're kind of being left behind. Like, the big brands in the conference want out. This started with Florida State over a year ago now. It started with Florida State, and now we've moved on to Clemson. And, you know, Clemson will get in this pissing contest with the conference, and they'll both sue each other. And whoever blinks first, right, and whoever is able to find a way out of the grant of rights gets that argument won in court, every other school is just going to use the exact same argument. Because now we have the blueprint to exit the ACC. That's the shoe to drop. And until that shoe drops, the exit fees are exorbitant. Like, these schools are going to have to pay millions and millions and millions of dollars. Like, hundreds of millions of dollars. And they're just not going to do it. They're not going to do it, right? I mean, they'll do it eventually. They'll find the money. Like, everybody's talking about how Florida State will find the money. We obviously saw the Saudi Seminole memes that were floating around the internet, kind of a play on the whole live golf thing. It's very funny, but like, in all seriousness,
you know where Brooks Koepka went to college?
Florida State.
That's right.
He's a Seminole. He's going to be their biggest donor because
he's got the connection, baby.
Yeah, right to Greg Norman. From his lips to God's ears, or whatever the saying is. They're going to try to pull that off. So whatever school, you know, finds the way out of the grant of rights and makes that successful argument in court. And once that argument is granted and all of a sudden that school wins and is able to get out of this, every other school is just going to follow suit. And once they go ahead and do that, it's going to be a pretty quick demise of the conference, I think, because all the big brands are going to leave. And the question that I've seen on social media is like, okay, Florida State and Clemson want to leave. Are we absolutely sure the Big Ten and the SEC are interested? Specifically the SEC, because the SEC has the ESPN contract, and right now the ACC and ESPN have a television rights agreement, right? Where the ESPN is paying substantially less to host those Florida State games. Like,
and the Clemson games.
Why would they voluntarily just all this, and the Clemson games, yes. Why would they voluntarily just say, okay, yeah, join the ACC, and now we're going to have to pay a ton more to put your games on television?
Well, they can get into markets like South Carolina and Florida, which, oh, right.
Wait a minute.
We're already in with both leagues.
So, I mean, I don't know the argument. I don't think the argument for Florida State and Clemson to the SEC, unless something changes, in my mind, makes a whole lot of sense. Geographically, of course it does. Of course it makes sense geographically.
Sure, yeah.
10 years ago, if you said, okay, Florida State and Clemson, like, we're going to play the realignment game that we played, like, a little over a decade ago when the ACC got Pittsburgh and Louisville, et cetera. Like, if we wanted to go back to that stage of realignment and you told me that Clemson and Florida State were going to go to the SEC, I would have said, okay, yeah, makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Now it makes no sense.
Yeah,
it makes no sense for ESPN. It makes sense for Florida State and Clemson to want to be in the SEC. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But from ESPN's standpoint, they're like, okay, well, look, we have an expanded playoff. You both can get in. Right now, we can pay less to host your games on television. What's the upside for us for you to be in the SEC?
And that's some of where this comes back to for me. And something we should make clear about this whole thing is we're talking about Florida State has filed a lawsuit against the ACC. Clemson has now followed it up with the same thing. This does not mean that either school is leaving the ACC, right? Like, they are multiple steps away from that. This is more trying to lay the groundwork. This is more trying to break down a couple barriers. That's what they're doing here. So don't be fooled into thinking that this is them leaving the conference or that they are, you know, one step away. I think there's multiple things that have to happen. And to your point, Mike, that's one of them is you can break down these barriers and say, okay, well, instead of, you know, roughly a $500 million penalty or whatever exorbitant number it is, maybe it's cut down to $100 million or something, which is, you know, as you and I know, that is not very much money at all. But let's say we're willing to pony up $100 million to get out of the conference. Then what? Like, If you're not going to do that, you're not going to pony up that money without knowing what your landing point is.
Right.
And I agree with you, Mike, is that it makes zero sense that the SEC and on some level, on a major level, ESPN, mm-hmm. would say, yeah, you know what? Like, we'll take that in and give another, I don't know, have $35 million a year or whatever it is to the conference for this team that we're already paying $15 million a year for, or whatever it is. Like, they would be upping that payment substantially from what they're already paying for those particular programs, and that just doesn't make sense. So, again, you got to find the landing point. Does it make sense for the Big Ten to take in Clemson and Florida State? Like, those are big brands, again. They are new territory for the Big Ten. So, yeah, sure. Like, on that level, it makes sense. But, buddy, you talk about from a just a institutional profile standpoint, like Clemson and Florida State, with the rest of the Big Ten, it is not a fit at all. And maybe that matters. Maybe it doesn't. Like, it's a new era. Like, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it doesn't matter. But, like, it's just a drastic difference between those two schools and institutions against a lot of those Big Ten land-grant universities, not to mention some of the West Coast schools that have now joined the Big Ten.
Well, see, and the last thing you said there, I think, is really important, right? The West Coast schools have joined the Big Ten. Because the Big Ten, as we know it, like, yes, those core schools are still going to be a part of the conference. But as conference expansion continues, and I think we've seen, I think we've seen the worst of it. The next shoe to drop is obviously if any of the ACC schools leave successfully. But, like, when you look at the Big Ten, like, okay, it's going to look different. Right? Like, it is going to look different. You now have the West Coast schools in the boat. Obviously, you have Washington and Oregon coming over from the Pac-12. They don't fit the profile of the Big Ten. They were never supposed to, because this was never supposed to happen, right? Mm-hmm. But now you're in a position where Washington and Oregon are now going to try to compete in this new Big Ten. Okay, let's play the game. Clemson and Florida State find their way out of the ACC. And who else, right? Carolina, Miami, Virginia Tech, like that next range of schools finds their way out of the ACC. Let's say, just for argument's sake, they all go to the Big Ten. The way that the conference, in my opinion, the way that the conference now recruits is going to be totally different. Like, okay, Ohio State and Michigan, national brands, right? Penn State, that they're more regional, but Ohio State and Michigan in particular, national brands in terms of recruiting. They recruit everywhere. They recruit everywhere incredibly well. Like, these other schools in that area of the country, they're going to be like, all right, we got to try to compete, right, with the big dogs in the conference. We want to try to win a conference championship. We're going to have to start recruiting like them. I think it will then matter less geographically where you're at. Like, all of a sudden, if Washington and Oregon and a Florida State and Clemson, for this argument, like, if they're in the conference, I think just the tone and tenor changes a lot if you start adding schools from the ACC. It's already changed just with Washington and Oregon in the fold. The SEC, for the most part, has kept their geography pretty intact. Oklahoma and Texas are obviously... we're pushing it, right? But, like, outside of those two additions, they've done a pretty good job of keeping the SEC, as we've known it for the last decade or so, the SEC. They were pushing the boundaries of A&M a decade ago, and Missouri. We should have seen this coming, right? But, you know, you add Texas and Oklahoma, and you're like, okay, we're done. They didn't go to the West Coast because they didn't need to. Mm-mm. They didn't need to. The Big Ten felt like they needed to keep up with the SEC. Now it's just a jumbled mess. And we'll get into the playoff expansion in a second, because this is just, like, we've been seeing, like, this whole thing five steps ahead for quite some time. A lot of people have. Like, we know what's coming next. Mm-hmm. And it's very annoying to talk about, but we're going to have to do it. And I think the ACC's demise is coming. I don't know how soon, because of what we were talking about with the television agreements in particular. I think if Florida State knew exactly where they could land, they would have just paid the exit fee already. They have plenty of rich donors. They would have found the money. Like, not knowing where you're going to land, like, before you pony up hundreds of millions of dollars from your donors, you're going to want to know what step two is. And until they know definitively what step two is, I don't think they're going to pony up that kind of money. I think they're going to want to try to escape the exit fee. Because to be honest, Joey, these conferences aren't going to tell you they're interested until they know you're actually available.
Yeah, nobody's offered a job until they've already accepted it, kind of thing. Like,
right.
It's, yeah. You say that we're going down the path towards the ACC's demise, and I want to walk that out a little bit because I'm not so sure that I fully agree with that. In my mind, Mike, and I think we've probably talked about this, you know, in some length on this podcast, and I know that certainly other media outlets in college football have as well. And yes, we are a media outlet on this podcast. I don't know if you know that, but there's a very obvious place that college football is going towards in the next 5, 7, 10, 12 years, whatever. Like, might not be that far away, right? Like, there's going to be a massive sea change somewhere in there, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
What would that be, Joey?
They're going to pay the players. Like, the players will become employees, you know, which is a massive change from everything that has ever happened in college football formally over the last 150 years, basically, as long as the sports existed. They're going to move towards paying the players. Now, it seems like along with that, there is probably likely going to be some sort of break off of the elite, super rich programs that can make this happen, right? Like we've talked about, they're not going to be beholden to the NCAA's policies that they're not enforcing. And, you know, like they're going to break off and do their own thing. Mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, it's probably some combination of a lot of the schools in the SEC and the Big Ten, it's Notre Dame. And then the thing that nobody's really sure about and that I don't have a good answer for is what is the number of schools that we're talking about here that's going to basically create this like minor league NFL, more or less, is what we're talking about. Is it 32? Is it 40? Is it 48? Is it 64? Like, we don't know. But basically what we can guarantee is that it's going to be some combo of primarily schools from the Big Ten and the SEC, and then you fill up the rest with maybe some of those bottom end Big Ten SEC schools, as well as, you know, your Clemson, your Florida State, probably a handful from the Big 12, you know, UNC and maybe Virginia Tech and Miami. And like, you know, take your pick of all the different brands here. But the thing that I'm thinking on is, so you go down this path and you create this broken off league. That's not going to be the whole ACC, right? And there's a scenario out there where it's really only like 3 or 4 ACC programs at that point.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. And we have a pretty good idea of who 2 of them would be, maybe 3 of them. But then beyond that, like, hard to say.
Yeah, I probably could have phrased that better. Like, the demise of the ACC as we know it, right? Like,
as we know it for sure, yeah.
The big brands, I don't think the conference is all of a sudden, like, next year, hypothetically, next year just going to, like, cease to exist. But, like, I do think that, you know, Clemson and Florida State finding a way out. Carolina is an attractive brand, obviously, because of their rich basketball history and their ability to pretend to compete on the football side. At least give the appearance that they're trying to compete on the football side. That makes them, and they have the whole Jordan brand. They're attractive, right? They would be probably number 3 on my list, I think.
Yeah. They're honestly a better fit with the Big Ten than Clemson or Florida State are in a number of ways.
I would certainly agree with that. I don't know how many of our viewers would agree with that, but I agree with that.
Hit us up in the comments.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there are a lot of unknowns. Mm-hmm. NIL is a train wreck. I don't mean to take this like totally off the rails, but like NIL,
let's go.
NIL. I mean, we had like a list of things we want to talk about tonight, and we left a few of them open ended, and this is one of them. NIL is an absolute train wreck. Guys are being bought and sold after spring practice. There are obviously no guidelines really in terms of like tampering. You can pretty much just tamper. Nobody's
Some
enforcing it.
Some people would argue that there's no such thing as tampering if players aren't under contract, which I understand your point. I don't really fully agree with that, but...
Yeah, I mean, just there's a lot ethically wrong with that, but again, like...
Shout out to Bud.
Going by the book, going by the book doesn't win in major college athletics. You gotta cheat a little bit, so we're tampering now. And for everybody saying, too, that the players have always been paid and NIL is just like players getting their fair share. Yeah, on the surface, I agree with all that. Like, it sounds great when you just make those blanket statements until you talk about the transfer portal and immediate eligibility and the fact that coaches are, it's like rampant tampering now because they could just say, oh, we're going to go to this collective and they're going to pay you X amount of money if you come here and we'll guarantee you a starting job and you'll become an All-American Jordan Addison. He was a Biletnikoff guy at Pitt. You know, you can come out here to USC and play with Caleb Williams. How's that sound? That was kind of the start of it. And it's only gotten worse ever since then. And the issue I see is there's going to be a breaking point, right? Because right now, schools cannot pay the players NIL, right? It's these collectives. So the buck is consistently being passed on to the consumer, right? It's being passed on to the college football fan, the alums. Schools are just constantly asking for more and more and more and more money. I see it with my alma mater, right? Virginia Tech has put everything into the football program, which is great. They should have been doing this all along, right? But they're pushing everything into the football program, and it's at the expense of losing a Final Four women's basketball coach in Kenny Brooks to Kentucky for a salary difference that's negligible to what he was making, something that you could have afforded, but you didn't want to foot that bill because you're pushing everything right now into the football program to make sure you're in the best position possible so you don't miss out on the next stage realignment.
Well, that whole, like, we're going to pay players with NIL now, you need to donate to your collective so that we can pay the players. That was a lot more fun, exciting, and interesting the first year or so that we were doing it, right? Is it as fun and exciting and interesting now as just a random fan as it was then?
Now that it's totally off the rails? You're hitting me up again?
It's like,
oh,
for what? What am I getting from my money?
It's a new fundraiser. And it's so funny, too, right? Because the schools can't technically pay the players NIL, right? But like in Virginia Tech's case, I'm not trying to single out Virginia Tech or criticize them because every single school that's serious about competing in college football is doing this. But Virginia Tech, they host their national signing. It's a brilliant idea. They host their national signing day live on YouTube and on all their social media accounts. And it's run, right? It's run and it's hosted by Triumph NIL. Virginia Tech's biggest collective is hosting the programming for the recruiting show on National Signing Day. They're working hand in hand with the coaching staff. But then I have to then read all these regulations and consume all this with a straight face that no, it's not the university paying the players, it's these collectives. Like the university isn't being like, yo, we need like 600 grand for this guy, we need 750k for this guy, we need 1.2 for our quarterback. Like, give me a break. They're working hand in hand, they're just going around it. Every school is doing it. My point is that like eventually the fans are gonna get sick of that shit, is what it's gonna boil down to. They're gonna get sick. They're gonna get sick of just paying dollar after dollar after dollar after dollar, all of their extra money that they have, right? Because people have families and mortgages and everything else. All these donations, they're getting sick of getting these emails. You get these emails nonstop. Eventually, you're just going to get tired of donating. And what's your school? What are you going to do, right? You're going to be once again relying on the rich donors at all of your individual schools and hoping that they foot the bill for the NIL. And that's all fun. But eventually, those rich people run out of patience too. And then what are you going to do?
Those
so I just think it's a bubble.
Look at the school and say, how many millions of dollars are you getting every year off these TV deals?
Right. Why aren't
you
paying
it? Why do you need my millions? You know, like, yeah. Sorry. I'm with you. It's, again, short term, it was exciting, interesting, new, you know, whatever. almost immediately it warped into the thing that we knew it was going to warp into. This is not NIL. It's pay for play. It's you're not paying a guy because he is really worth a lot to have on your local car dealership's commercials or tweeting about your, you know, whatever, or that one guy from Oakland taking three-pointers in the hotel lobby promoting, was it Buffalo Wild Wings, I think?
And TurboTax.
TurboTax, right. Yeah, like, it's not actually worth that. It's not worth $1.5 million or whatever to have that guy do that. You know, this is all pay-for-play, thinly veiled. We knew it was. We said it was from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And it's clear, again, we'll get into something here in a minute that I have a thought on with the playoff expansion. But, yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. And it's like, just, we know where this is going. Just do it. Just do it already. Like, stop drawing this out and acting like it might happen, it might not. Like, we know what's going to happen. You can easily read the tea leaves of what's happened over the last decade plus in this sport with the realignment and the contracts and the playoff expansion and all that stuff. And you know where this is going.
Yeah.
So just do it.
Yeah, just rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. It's I don't want to say that NIL has ruined the sport, because I don't think NIL is the reason why we're at where we're at.
Not single-handedly.
It's part of the puzzle, but I don't think it's the sole reason or anything like that. And I'm not here to go on an anti-NIL crusade. I think people have listened to this podcast long enough to know kind of where I stand, where I think NIL itself is very good, right? I think the transfer portal itself and automatic eligibility is really good in a silo. And when NIL is what it's supposed to be, right? Name, image, likeness, like, that's what it's supposed to be. And it's not pay for play. I think it's really good. And people are going to take that statement as, oh, you just don't want these players to be getting more than what they're worth. And, you know, who am I to dictate what their value is? Well, I don't think it's right that, you know, Clemson, right, can call up Indiana, you know, for example. Let's say, like, Indiana has, like, one All-American on their roster every, like, 5 years. They call up Indiana, they're like, oh, we want your left tackle, like, right after spring practice.
I feel like you're
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, transfer portal.
Florida State could call up Indiana.
Florida State. Yeah.
Louisville.
Yeah. Don't tell Dabo there's a transfer portal. He might combust. Florida State could call up like some middle of the road P5 school after spring practice. Pick up the best player on their roster and pay him like more than any other school can pay because they have the money and this other school doesn't. And they're just they're hosed. Like, they can't do anything about that. They're like, oh, well, we know you don't have the money, so we're just going to offer more than anybody else can.
You get nothing in return.
Call it NIL.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening everywhere. It's happening everywhere. Except for Clemson, ironically. It's not happening there. But it's happening everywhere else. And Clemson's doing it too with their own roster, right? Like, they got to pay the guys to keep on their own roster. So they're doing it. They have the money to retain players, which is great, because otherwise Dabo might be out of a job. At least he's retaining some of his 4- and 5-star guys. Yeah. But it's we're in a weird state. The ACC as we know it, I think, just to get back to the original 10 of the conversation, I think is in a really, really, really tough spot here, because you almost wish the grant of rights could be broken, because at least the conference has some options at that point, right? Like, this doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you lose Florida State and Clemson. Like, would that still be the most likely scenario? Yeah, probably. But at least you have options for, like, the remaining institutions that do have some value. Like, okay, maybe we can go to the Big 12, right, and create, like, a third super conference, right, and then we have at least three. And the Big 12 has this newer media contract that's not getting Big Ten or SEC money, but is doing decently well. It's like, okay, well, at least we have options now. Right now, you don't have any options.
Yeah. So this is the thing, is I wanted to bring it home with, again, what does the future of this conference look like? And yeah, I mean, it seems likely at this point that one day, at some point, Clemson and Florida State and probably a couple others are going to leave the conference, and they are no longer going to be members of the ACC. I don't know if that's UNC. I don't know if that's Miami. I don't know, Virginia Tech. You know, who it is. It could be – we don't really know. It's hard to predict, honestly. But I think that that's only a fraction at the top of the conference.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like a lot – there's a significant middle portion of the conference that's all pretty comparable in terms of, like, fan base size, institutional alignment, a lot of these things that's like – I feel like a lot of us are going to still be together 10 years from now, whether that's, you know, again, it depends on how many schools break off to go to this whatever new Super League nonsense stuff, you know, but I feel like a lot of us are still going to be in the same place. And, you know, we'll see if that comes to fruition, but I would be surprised if the ACC just totally like implodes and breaks off into like four pieces or whatever.
It's just going to be tough when, like, Wake Forest steps up and decides, yeah, we want to be part of the league. Wake Forest, again, bad example. But, like, hey, we want to be in the league that competes for a national title. And then Greg Sankey, college football's overlord, just says, no, you don't make us enough money. Like, oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I guess we're out then. I guess we're competing for, like, the Group of Five title. It's just going to be
NC State stole one of those bids in the tournament from someone else who was more deserving and might have made the Final Four. Wait, sorry.
Greg Sankey loves himself a good old bad argument, doesn't he? NC State is proving his point.
As perfect of a put your foot in your mouth moment right before the tournament.
Yeah,
I could imagine.
Yeah, with like national media people, it's just brain dead performance. Yeah, I don't know. It's I think where we're headed is, you know, like you mentioned, there's going to be this like Super League at the top, and then everybody else is just going to become like what the FCS is now. Like, you're just adding a division to college football, I think, eventually is what you're doing. I mean, if you got to take a step back and think about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Only last thing I'll say here, once again, Clemson, Florida State, trying to find a way out at some point. I think we're still a ways away from this. I remember, I believe it was the preseason show with James Coleman about Florida State before this season, and we asked him how long is Florida State in the league, and I want to say he said they would be out of the ACC by the start of the 2025 season. I don't think that's and again, I'm quoting things that he said like 8 months ago. So that, you know, things have changed. It's not
lots
fair
changed,
to him.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is I think that timeline is changing a little bit. It's going to be a little bit more drawn out than that. I think we've got a little bit more time before we actually get some proper movement on this. But again, who's to say?
Shout out Ron.
Hey, Ron. I have also before been stuck on the tarmac at Hartsfield, and that is not a good place to be. So right there
me
with
three.
You, buddy.
Me three. Not great. Mm-hmm. And Dennis 133, everyone is talking about adding, but what about the bottom of the SEC and the Big Ten? Do those teams eventually get kicked out to make room for others? 1,000%.
Something we alluded to probably 10, 15 minutes ago, we've been talking about this for a while, is the Super League probably involves most of the teams from those leagues. Not sure it involves Vandy and Mississippi State, excuse me.
Indiana.
Indiana, Purdue, like some of these, like, doesn't have to involve all of them. So I think that's completely on the table, I feel like.
And you're going to start seeing the schools that are competing in college basketball try to make arguments for why they should be included, right? So you're going to get the North Carolinas of the world saying we should be part of this Super League. Then you're going to have a school like Purdue, which has struggled on the football field the last two decades, and they're going to be like, you know what? We should belong because we have a national championship caliber basketball program. We're making the same argument North Carolina is. Like, you're going to get into a pissing match that way, too, where you have, you know, the basketball brands that are struggling on the football field that's making all the money try to make the argument for basketball that they should still be part of the Super League. So that's where that's going to start to leak into, in my opinion.
Yep. I was going to say, what do you do with Kentucky? But, like, they've been winning 8 games a year in football for a while now. And it's one of those things, you know, I feel like Kentucky almost maybe in a little bit of the same place of Clemson, where, like, Clemson has definitely gotten good and started investing in football at the right time. Because prior to 2008, we were not talking about Clemson the way that we talk about him now. Right? Like, right. They were not in a place where they were some nationally dominant program for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So very fortunate for them that they really kind of started hitting their stride at the start of the playoff era. Because if we were having these discussions 15 years ago, Clemson's not one of the two or three best programs in the ACC. You know, like...
No.
It's very recent.
It was the whole Clemsoning thing. Mm-hmm. We've gone full circle, right? We went mm-hmm. from the Clemsoning era at the beginning of Dabo. Well, we went Tommy Bowden. And then we went Clemsoning with Dabo. And then we circled back around to now we won some titles. Now we won't adapt, so we're going back down the apex. And then we're just going to get back to, like, Clemsoning. Mm-hmm. And then maybe being bad. Like, they'll fire Dabo, and then they'll be swimming with the sharks of the SEC or the Big Ten, and they'll be, like, three or four steps behind because they didn't want to use the portal. that would philosophically have to change, and the money would still have to be there, right? Which,
yeah,
I don't know. I think it would be, but...
Interesting thought experiment on if Dabo retires or they... God forbid they fire Dabo. Is Clemson like a fail-proof machine at this point? Or is there some secret sauce with Dabo there that would not be easily replicable with any other random, you know, head coach that they hired?
I think the one thing you do have, a couple things. You have a really passionate fan base, number one. Mm-hmm. Dabo's got a ton. I mean, they've been passionate forever, but Dabo's been a big part of that.
You got a big old stadium, and they don't have a hard time filling it.
Yeah. Two, you have an unbelievable alumni and donor base, right? There's the donor enthusiasm aspect, the IPTE club. Yeah, I pay 10 a year. Yeah. That thing can, yeah, that horse can run, so to speak. They got some money behind that.
I think it's a little more than 10 these years, but
yeah,
started that way.
I pay 10 grand a year.
Whatever it takes, I guess.
Yeah. Not using it in the portal, so what are they using it for?
Is IPTE a collective now? Anyway, before we go down that hole.
There's the New Spring Church conspiracy. Do we want to go down that rabbit hole or no? I'm just kidding.
I honestly don't know what you're talking about, and I don't think I want to.
Okay, it's fine. It's a theory that... We're not putting that comment up, even though I'm laughing at it.
Not putting that one up.
Oh, man. Can't leak group chats, you know? I totally lost my train of thought after I saw a comment. Moving on.
I am out on this topic. We're going to transition into something kind of related here, I think. Anything else, Mike, before we... do that.
Nah, I think that was a solid 40 minutes, so we can move on to this next point.
My favorite transition is by talking about section103.com, the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. They've got t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, something for women, children, everyone in the family, something for any Georgia Tech fan in your life. I love my Section 103 wear. I'm wearing it right now. Got this beautiful white Ramblin' Wreck shirt on. It is super soft, super comfortable, fits great. Anything you need for a Georgia Tech game coming up, go to section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Keep an eye on their website. Keep an eye on their social media. They've got new deals coming all the time. Anytime Georgia Tech pulls off big upsets, football, basketball, other sports, you know, volleyball, softball, etc., they've got different deals. They'll give you, you know, a certain percentage off on a certain day. They had a new NIL-based shirt. It's a jersey for Drew Burris for the baseball team. That came out relatively recently. So check out all the things you need for Georgia Tech support, section103.com. Again, men, women, children, something for the whole family. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your order at section103.com.
Shout out, Steven.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Steven and the gang. Appreciate their partnership. Sorry for not recording an episode the entire month of March.
thanks for the payment in advance.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mike, kind of on a related note to what we've been talking about, and really the way that I relate this is, well, we'll get to that. Mike, when you think back on the 12-team playoff era, what was what was the biggest issue that we had? Is there a team that was left out that you really felt like was a problem? Is there was there a way that the selection or the seeding happened that you felt like was a like who got screwed? What was the biggest issue that we had in the 12-team playoff era?
That we didn't have more teams, Joey. That was the issue, that we didn't have more teams, and that, you know, the best part about it is that we didn't even have to play any games to know that we didn't have the number of teams that we needed. We needed more of them.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. We haven't played a single game of the 12-team playoff era, and yet we're already starting to fix problems that we didn't even have. We found out officially that the 12-team playoff, scheduled to start this year at the end of the 2024 season, is going to be expanding to 14 teams for the 2026 season.
Great.
Yeah. This is an improvement, right? This gets better. This is better than what we had.
Here's okay, so this isn't going to surprise you. A lot of things annoy me about this. I know you look shocked. A lot of things annoy me about this. But let's start with this. One of the arguments for some national college football reporters that I'm not going to name or put on blast here. Some of the arguments I've seen out there since this is broken.
We know they're listening. I mean,
is something along the lines. Yeah. It's something along the lines of, oh, well, this allows for more group of five representation. Which, look, I'm so glad they said that with a straight face. Because the first thing I thought of when I saw this go from 12 teams to 14 teams is, oh, good, we're going to get more mediocre elite teams, right? Because you have the actual elite, right? You have the 3 to 4 programs in the sport that are perennially competing. Then you have like the fake elite, which is like really good program. Any year could have stepped up in the 14 playoff and been like the third or fourth team in. Think like Notre Dame making the two college football playoff runs. Like Florida beginning in Mullen. I'm just
somebody
thinking.
Please, like, quote Mike McDaniel as saying that Notre Dame is a fake elite team.
Fake elite, right? Like one step below the actual elites, you know?
Incredible. Please continue.
Damn. I played myself there, didn't I? My point is, we're going to get to a point where we're now like 3/4 of the way through the top 25 trying to figure out reasons why 8-4 team should be in the college football playoff, only to get absolutely bludgeoned in the first round in a road game, right? They're going to be playing like, you know, if you give like the top couple schools byes, they're going to be playing like the third or fourth best team in the country. They're going to go on the road, and they're going to be a 3-touchdown underdog, and they're going to get absolutely demolished. And we're going to be looking at this and say, great, why is this? Why did they even make the playoff? And I'm going to put my hand up and say, nobody asked for this. Not a single person asked for this. Like,
oh, I know who asked for it.
You can complain, Greg Sankey. We can complain about the bowl formats, right? We can complain about, oh, there are too many bowl games. There's this, there's that. I could find bowl games with teams and players that have opted out, which, by the way, players are going to opt out at the college football playoff. We're going to pretend like the 14th team isn't going to have a top prospect, going to opt out when they know there's not a chance in hell they're going to win a national championship. They're going to opt out, Joey. I've seen like people dispute that, college football fans dispute that. We are going to see that with teams that know they legitimately do not have a chance to win the whole thing, that are going to make it into this playoff as like the 13th or 14th team, and they're going to have one of their star players decide, you know what, I'm good. Christian McCaffrey did it. With a huge game, with a New Year's Six game, McCaffrey said, "I'm good. I'm going to the pros. Like, I'm done." And that was the start of all this. So now we're gonna pretend like the only thing that matters, because conference championships used to matter. There goes my dog. Conference championships used to matter, right? But those don't matter anymore. Only thing that matters is this 14-team playoff, where, by the way, Joey, the final team standing are still going to be the four or five teams that have always had a shot to win the whole thing. They're just going to be standing at the end anyway, competing for a national championship. What are we doing?
Yeah.
We're back to doing, I mean, you're back to a 14 playoff, essentially. Like, okay, yeah, it's 14 teams, but you're back to where you started, the four or five best teams. This isn't college basketball. Like, that's not how this works. The sport doesn't work like that. The elite teams don't lose to a mid-major. Like, that's not, you know, your top group of five team that's going to be like a 13 or a 14 seed in this new college football tournament is not going to all of a sudden win a national title or make a run, you know, to a college football playoff semifinal. It's just not going to happen. Like, Coastal Carolina is not all of a sudden going to be, you know, in the spotlight playing in a national title game and going to take Georgia by surprise. That's not going to happen. Anybody who's going to compare the coastal thing to USC, and we can't have this conversation seriously. We can't do it. They're not going to become Tulane, and Tulane isn't going to beat a fully rounded, like, top four team. USC was flawed 2 years ago when Tulane pulled off that upset in the bowl game. Like, it just doesn't happen. So a lot of stuff annoys me here, but the biggest thing that annoys me is we're just going to be right back where we started. We're going to have four teams that all year look like the four best teams on paper, and they are going to be at the top or near the top of the playoff. Maybe one of them loses and you get another team in, and then they get demolished like a TCU did 2 seasons ago. Like, this is so dumb. It makes no sense. Not a single college football fan asked for a 14-team playoff. And if you did, you've lost the plot.
Yeah. This doesn't help you as the college football fan. I mean, I guess it gives you games between December 20th and, you know, I don't know, January 15th or whatever it is, you know, that are somewhat more stakes than before. But if you're looking at this thinking, well, this is a better way to make sure that we determine the right national championship, yeah, like, you're kidding yourself. It's not. Football is not that much of a random sport. The NCAA tournament is more random because they're one-game scenarios in basketball. NBA, like, the NBA playoffs is one of the least random things in all of professional sports, the entire world, right? Like, but, like, a single game of basketball is way more random than a single game of football. And, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, if there's 14 teams in the playoff, what is the highest seed that I can imagine making the semifinals? And it's probably like a 6 seed.
I was going to say a 6.
I could see a 5 or a 6. A 3. And that's about the best I can get. Because, yeah, if you get a 12 or a 14 or whatever that somehow wins their first round game, that's a sacrificial lamb for the 1 seed, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, they're going to get smoked in their next game. So don't kid yourself into thinking that this is a better way to make sure that we get the right national champion. You're trying to create some good TV games in that December, January timeframe, you know, whatever, but it's not better. And you're right, Mike. People are going to opt out of this. You know, you can.
Yeah. Yeah. People
I have maintained on this show for a couple of years now, you could make sure that people, you know, maybe not that they don't opt out at all, but you could definitely keep that to an absolute minimum if you just add extra incentives onto some of these postseason games.
Mm-hmm.
Every player that, you know, sees the field on the losing team gets 10 grand. Every team on, you know, every player on the winning team gets 20, 25 for offensive player of the game, you know, 50,000 for MVP, you know,
125 grand to throw the game.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah. Like, DraftKings would love that. They would put their name on it, I'm sure. They'd sponsor that.
Well, Paul Crew action.
DraftKings, not a sponsor, could be. You know, we're open to that.
BetUS?
One other thing that I'll mention here that we haven't mentioned yet is that as part of this expansion is they also have locked in 10 of the 14 spots by conference. So the SEC and the Big Ten will each get a guaranteed 3 teams into the playoff every year. The ACC and the Big 12 will get a guaranteed 2 teams each year, meaning there will only be like 4 true at-large spots. And if I'm not mistaken, Mike, I'm not remembering wrong, one of those is going to go to a group of 5, 6, what, like a non...
Whatever we're calling them now.
Yeah, whatever we're calling it these days. Liberty will get, you know, one of those spots basically every year, I'm sure.
Notre Dame.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, the way that I look at this, and you mentioned early, like basically at the beginning of us talking about this, was who asked for this? And I said, I know who asked for this. And you said Greg Sankey, and you're right, Greg Sankey. And there's other names that are escaping me at the moment, but it's conference commissioners, and it's administrators, and it's TV executives, and it's, these are the people that stand to make money off of this, that stand to benefit from it. That's basically it. Like, this is an act of greed, Mike, purely. Like, that's where I come back to this, and it's some of the conference realignment stuff.
Yeah.
None of this is for the good of the sport. It's not for the good of the fans. It is for greed. It is money, 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 money. It is not actually for improved entertainment or anything else. And that
but
is
they'll
where
pretend.
I really have an issue with it.
But they'll pretend. They'll pretend
oh, sure.
that it is.
Oh, yeah.
They'll sell it to you like it is. They'll market it like it is, but mm-hmm. it's not. And the people who are making these decisions at the top of the sport are television executives that really have a vested interest in the NFL. They don't watch college football. Their biggest broadcast partner in a lot of cases. I mean, we're talking about Fox and ESPN and CBS for a while. Obviously, that's changed a little bit, but they still got, Big Ten games, right? Like, NBC's got their Big Ten games. Like, their moneymaker has always been the NFL. They're modeling it after that. College football was never meant to be the NFL. It was never meant to be a 32-team, 32-team league where, you have 12 to 14 teams in a playoff to decide your champion. That's the NFL. That's what we have the NFL for. Like, that's not what college football is and was meant to be, but that's how the television executives view it because they see how successful and how rich the NFL has made them, and they're trying to parlay it into the second best thing, which is college football. College football is going to, and I think college football is the greatest sport on the planet. This isn't me saying it's the second best thing. This is the TV exec saying from a revenue standpoint, college football is the next best thing. It's going to make us just as much money as the NFL. That's what we've decided. And you know how it'll make us just as much money? If we put the best teams on TV and tell everybody else to go screw. And that's exactly what they're doing. And yep. it's not good for normal people, normal college football fans. This is not normal. We were never trained, right, to think this way about the sport. Like, anybody who is in our age bracket, Joey, like early 30s and older, we didn't grow up thinking that the college football playoff was the only thing, right? And I know we have a lot of like younger listeners that have like some of their like formative college football years, so to speak, have been with the college football playoff because it's been around a decade. Like, if you're in your 20s, right, you're thinking back to when you were like 10, 11, 12, like that's when the college football playoff came. It didn't always used to be like this. People used to complain about the BCS, and I know like there are enough college football fans who are younger who are like informed and like have an idea of what the BCS was, and the BCS had plenty of flaws, right? Namely, like, it was a computer-based algorithm. The eye test wasn't really involved. Like,
well,
it was
tweaked the computers every year to try to fit the eye test,
right? And it never quite worked. So then ESPN said, you know what, we'll make a college football playoff, and then it's just evolved from there. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And the BCS had, like, if you were a group of five school and you scheduled some tough teams and you beat them and then you ran through your conference schedule, guess who had a chance to play for the national championship at the end of the year? Guess who was in the conversation? The group of five school. So everybody telling me, like, we're talking like old school TCU, Joey. Like, there was some, like, go back, look at some of those BCS
Mountain
rankings.
Mountain West TCU?
Mountain West TCU was in that conversation. Like, this isn't, you and I are old enough, this wasn't that long ago, Joey. Wasn't that long ago where, you know, you want to talk about group of five representation. It's a hot button topic with the college football playoff and like, oh, was a group of five team ever going to have a chance to win a national championship? Yeah, they used to in the BCS. They used to have that opportunity. Everybody was saying they were getting robbed because they would be left out. They would be the number three or number four team. They're still getting robbed, but they're getting screwed more than ever before because now they're not getting television money either. It's worse. Yep. They're worse off now. It makes me crazy.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, again, I saw a thing on Twitter, I think, I don't know, a few months ago, whatever it was, and it's just, it was painfully accurate when I saw it. It was basically like whatever college football was when you were a sophomore in college, you think was the best version of it. And damn if that didn't hit home. Like realizing that was right before the Big East had really kind of split up. It was still late BCS. You know, we hadn't started doing the playoff thing yet. Like that was really like some of the best that college football was. And it sucks feeling like everything that's happened since then and 12 years now, since I was a sophomore in college, now I feel old. Very, very little of it has been for the better from what I can tell.
Yeah.
You know, so not ideal. Not ideal. I will say, in a weird way, this expansion from 12 to 14, probably a positive for the ACC.
Yeah.
Because guaranteeing that you get two schools in every year, probably better on balance for, you know, for the near future than what you would have had otherwise. So, I don't know. I'll leave it at that. But yeah, I don't like where this is going for college football, and we've been very clear about that for quite a while now on this show.
Well, and we left a key part of this out that I think we definitely need to mention: the fact that the college football playoff, you know, committee, right, that's putting this whole thing together, has decided that, you know, since the Big Ten and the SEC are going to have the largest number of teams. Since they're going to have the largest number. Sorry. It's Otto in the background.
High alert with a dog.
Yeah. Not really sure what he's doing. He's flopping around. Since they're going to have the highest number of teams, they're going to get the most revenue from the playoff. So, like, as this couldn't get worse. The SEC and Big Ten are going to get even more rich off of the expanded college football playoff, which feels good if you're, like, a fan of literally anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's one of the things that we've known for a while that the SEC and the Big Ten make more money on their TV contracts than the ACC and the Big 12 and even the Pac-10 or Pac-12 or whatever did. But it was never like hard-coded into the system.
Right.
That, you know, these conferences are objectively worth more than the others, and that sucks. And honestly, it brings us back a little bit to the realignment discussion. Is like, okay, more money, but like at the end of the day, like for what? For what? Florida State didn't miss the playoff this year because they weren't making enough money.
Right.
Jordan Travis didn't break his leg because they weren't making enough money. Like Florida State should have been in the playoff this year. You're already making way less money than these other schools are. And maybe it goes into the whole, again, we're about to start paying the players conversation. That's the only thing I can think of in terms of for what.
Right.
Because I will say this before we have like one little thing we're going to hit on here at the end. The whole thing about like we're going to get left behind and, you know, we can't compete in this era if we don't keep up with the spending, you know, whatever. It's like I'm telling you right now. That's a bunch of administrators. That's a bunch of TV executives putting a boogeyman out there. yeah. saying you can't compete. Dude, at the end of the day, there's only so many people who are capable of playing college football at this level. They can't all go to four places. Yeah. There is enough to go around. You can compensate them, you know, whatever. You can compete in college football without making $100 billion a year like these SEC and Big Ten programs are going to make.
Yeah.
Florida State and Clemson are already doing it. So what's the concern here? That's just a boogeyman. It's not real. Don't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, congrats USC on like your $200 million payroll, but you still got to stop somebody on third and four. Like, that's the thing. Like, the money part is a key part of the conversation in terms of like NIL, right? But in
is it all about money, or is it all about winning games?
Right. Because at the end of,
you know, not being able to win games, like you're saying, Mike, it's not because you're not making enough money. It's because your defense sucks.
Right. Right, because Alex Grinch was your defensive coordinator. That's why you couldn't stop anybody. Like, you couldn't stop anybody in two different conferences. Okay, like, he's
your
moved on.
Players making
fine.
More money doesn't mean they're going to tackle better than they were.
Like, right, yeah. Could you get better players? Sure you can, but USC had plenty of five stars. They couldn't tackle. Like, Texas has had plenty of five stars, and up until last season when they finally broke through and made a college football playoff, they couldn't tackle anybody. Or they'd make a stupid play on offense, right? They'd have a dumb turnover. They didn't have the talent at quarterback up until Quinn Ewers. Like, no disrespect to Sam Ehlinger, right? But, like, that's, you know, the Texas team's woefully underachieved for, like, a decade. This is, like, the conversations we're having. Like, it's not all about money. Money is an important piece in terms of getting the NIL to the players, because that's the era we're in. But you still got to make the plays. Like, congrats to Florida State on a great season. They won a few games by the skin of their teeth, right? Like, they were in a weird game with Boston College in September that a lot of people like to forget about. Like, great, awesome. They have a bunch of money and they want to leave the conference. Like, be careful
too
what you wish for. Right. Too good for this. Be careful what you wish for. Right. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say.
How's that going for Maryland?
There's got to be an even better example. How's that going for Texas A&M?
Should be going better.
Yeah. Yeah.
They thought going to the SEC saved him from having to be in a conference with Texas anymore. Surprise! Daddy's back.
Oh, man.
All right, Mike. I have another professional transition here. You ready?
Yep, ready.
Playoffs expanding. ACC gets two teams in. First year. Who are the two teams you think are most likely to get in the playoff from the ACC?
Because this is going to be 2026. So
2 years.
2 years from now.
Don't think too hard about it.
Clemson and Florida State?
Boom. Mike, there's a small but important difference between Clemson and Florida State. Do you know what it is?
What would that be?
How do they construct their rosters?
Florida State uses the portal. Clemson does not.
Clemson uses high school. Florida State does not. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk real quick. We have not yet talked about final recruiting rankings, and
there's a transition.
Yeah, there you go. We can hit this briefly, but I almost don't even want to talk about this in specifics. I want to talk about it kind of more broadly, I think.
Yes.
Because
yeah,
that's the only way that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's two sets of recruiting rankings. One of them I don't even know that is technically finalized at this point, considering we still have the spring transfer window coming up. But we'll do what we can do here. High school recruiting rankings. Miami finishes first in the ACC. I believe they were pretty high, like top five in the country. Really strong recruiting class out of high school for Miami. Two, Clemson. Three, Florida State. This kind of that part really kind of defeats my argument, but we'll try to make it happen. Whatever. Number four, North Carolina. Number five, NC State. Six, Stanford. Seven, Georgia Tech. Eight, Syracuse. Interesting. Nine, Pittsburgh. 10, Virginia Tech. Interesting in a bad way. 11, Wake Forest.
Small class.
Yeah, we'll get to that too.
Yeah.
11, Wake Forest. 12, California. 13, Louisville. 14, Duke. 15, Virginia. 16, Boston College. 17, SMU. Also interesting. Now, here's the other thing is, again, we got transfer portal rankings. And these, I feel like, are also pretty widely varying because there's a huge swing in like the number of players per team. Yeah. I don't want to hit the number per team, but let's just, again, go through rankings. 1, Florida State. 2, Louisville. 3, NC State. 4, Cal. 5, Syracuse. 6, Miami. 7, SMU. 8, Duke. 9, Boston College. 10, Virginia. 11, Pittsburgh. 12, North Carolina. 13, Georgia Tech. 14, Virginia Tech. 15, Wake Forest. 16, Stanford. Not applicable, Clemson. And I'm not making that up, by the way. That's not a joke. That is how it's listed on the website. My point here, Mike, is
made in God's name, image, and likeness, baby.
That's right. By the way, we haven't really mentioned, I don't think, that Clemson added Matt Luke as offensive line coach, former Ole Miss head coach.
Mm-hmm.
They've made a couple of staff additions this offseason that have flown a little bit under the radar, but are low-key really, really good staff additions. So
yeah, it's never been a problem with, I mean, they started to remediate this when they added Garrett Riley, but then Dabo wanted to mix his stuff with Clemson stuff.
I believe we're up to 4 outside assistants over the last 2 off seasons.
It's good.
That's noteworthy positive change for Clemson, for what that's worth. So the reason I bring all this up, Mike, is ultimately that if you hadn't followed college football in the last 5 years, but you remember what it was like in the 2010s, high school recruiting was everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I'll say this part out loud. Like mid 2010s, I'm watching Paul Johnson Georgia Tech football. I'm in denial 100%. About like, well, but you know, you don't have to have the best talent as long as you can coach them up and the scheming and all that stuff. I was in denial. It's talent is so much of everything of this sport. And for the longest time, the only real way to consistently get that talent was from high school.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike, at this point with the state of the transfer portal, and we've talked about some things tonight, I don't think that high school recruiting has ever been less meaningful than it is right now. It ultimately has to be like a full roster construction exercise because getting back to the way that we started this conversation, who are the two teams most likely to be in the playoff from the ACC in the next few years? Florida State and Clemson.
Right.
Florida State not exactly lighting the world on fire with high school recruiting is noted as one of the very best at pulling guys out of the portal over the last few years under Mike Norvell. Clemson, explicitly high school recruiting, does not recruit out of the portal at all, famously. So it's like there's two different ways that you can get to that goal end point. And I think that's just kind of illustrative of like recruit out of high school or don't. I mean, and especially when you get to the idea that how many of these high school recruits in these classes? Miami's got 27 commitments out of high school. That's the number one class in the ACC. It's one of the very best in the country. How many of those guys are going to see the field for Miami before they transfer somewhere else?
Well, right. I mean, there are three. Right. Well, I mean, there are three types of recruiting now, Joey. You forgot one. You ready?
So
there's high school recruiting. Been in plenty of those meetings. Checked out my LinkedIn. There's high school recruiting. There's a transfer portal. And then there's recruiting your own roster. Right? So I think the one thing that Clemson has done a really nice job of, right, is obviously forever they've been at worst like a top 10 team in the sport recruiting high school, at best a top like 3 or 4 team, depending on what quarterback they pull in a particular year, right?
I was going to say, there have been times that they've been outside of the top 10 nationally, but they've been, it's like 16 signees out of high school. It's like a small class messes with the numbers. But yeah, like on, you know, on a per player basis, yeah, consistently top end of the sport out of high school.
For yeah.
The whole of Dabo's tenure, basically.
Yeah. 24/7 Sports does the, they do the average recruit ranking. That's the thing you got to follow because of the next point I'm about to make. Recruiting your own roster is so critical, right? Keeping guys home, like keeping guys in the program, because now we're in a state where I agree with you. I think high school recruiting outside of like the top, and Clemson's in this conversation, right? But like outside of the top, like handful of schools near the top of the sport that are going after the top players out of high school recruiting has never been less important, right, to those elite programs, because they can get whatever talent they want out of the portal. They can get an All-American in the door. Like Caleb Downs can go to an Ohio State, right? That's huge. Like that's gigantic. You can get an All-American and add him into the fold. Mm-hmm. As far as like the rest of the schools, you got to make a decision. Like if you're just a regular run-in-the-mill school, you got to decide, all right, how are we going to construct our roster? Ideally, you're making hay with like the high threes and the low fours. I'm talking specifically Virginia Tech. Like you're making hay with these like 3 and 4 star guys, but then you're also, you know, getting some quality depth out of the portal. So you can bring some of the young guys along, but you're also supplementing. I think most of the sport is doing that because they have to be competitive now, because it's totally like the tone and tenor of the sport has totally changed. And so I agree with your point. I think outside of like the top brands in the sport, the elite, the top 10 or so, 10 or 12 programs that are like pulling in, you know, the high four and 5-star talent, outside of those schools, man, like you can get, you know, your 3-star talent that you're getting at the end of your recruiting class, like you can now get that guy out of the portal in some cases, probably for cheaper than it would cost you, right? To maybe get this guy signed into your class just based off of NIL. Like you might be able to go out and get a kid who has already been there and done that at the college level. Maybe he's coming from a G5. And he can come into your program and step in as a veteran starter and not cost you the same that maybe a high 3-star would, who's maybe like, all right, well, I've been under-recruited. That's why I'm only a 3-star. I'm actually worth this, you know? And it might cost the school a little bit more money. It's we're in a weird spot with recruiting, too, obviously.
Yeah. Yep. Completely. And I mean, I'll just... Again, like I think of it from my own experience, and I think about 5-6 years ago, I mean, I was like glued to my computer screen on National Signing Day, trying to see who you flipped, you know, like it just felt like a huge deal. And now I just feel like I can ignore high school recruiting for the most part, because it's like half these guys aren't going to play for my team.
Yeah.
And kind of the flip side of that, what's interesting is, for Georgia Tech in particular, I mean, you can look at a number of guys on that roster that out of high school, they signed with Texas A&M, Alabama, Auburn, Notre Dame, Michigan. Like some of these real blue blood programs, they show up, they're third, fourth string, like they're not going to play there. So they want to transfer back home to Atlanta, where all of a sudden, being that you're not good enough to play at Michigan or you're not good enough to play at Alabama doesn't mean you're not a very good football player. So there's some of that too, where again, this transfer portal thing is like, well, he didn't play at Auburn. Like, you know, he's not good enough to play there. Like he's probably a low 3-star transfer grade. Like, well, I mean, he was a mid 4-star out of high school. Like, is he, you know? So I am basically at the point at this point of just ignoring transfer rankings, recruiting rankings for the most part. Maybe you get a couple of pretty high-end guys out of high school or something going to your school, and I'll pay attention to that. But with the way that roster management is at this point, I just have to wait to see who's on the field on Saturdays in the fall.
And yeah,
that's what I go off of. I cannot spend mental energy and emotional investment on the increased level of just like speculative stuff that recruiting has become in the sport. Yeah. It's a huge deal, but I cannot invest myself in it at all at this point.
I mean, beginning of the end of the Justin Fuente era was when he couldn't retain, this is like beginning of the transfer portal, like couldn't retain his like top talent and also couldn't recruit, and guys were flipping. And it was like a signal at the time, right? This is like 4 or 5 years ago. It was a signal, right, that he was losing, you know, he was losing the quality of, you know, the quality roster. He was losing the depth. He was losing, you know, his recruits. He was, you know, losing the support of the program. Now, Joey, it becomes tougher to figure out, like, if a guy, a big-time prospect, is flipping or he's leaving the program, it becomes tougher to figure out if that's, like, a coaching or culture issue or if this is just a guy who's trying to chase a payday somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to tell now. Like, and I feel like with a coach that's on the hot seat, you can just go ahead and create whatever narrative you want. But I think in a lot of cases now, especially in the last year or so, a lot of times if a guy's transferring out, he's just chasing a bag. That's why Pete Thamel is coming on, and he can tell you exactly where a player is going to go as soon as he enters the transfer portal, because they're scampering. Because, yeah, you know, a player is securing a payday, a raise, an NIL somewhere else. Like Riley Leonard entered the transfer portal. Pete Thamel said, "Yeah, Notre Dame's going to be a serious factor here." There's a reason
why.
How do
you know that, Pete?
Right. It's almost like, you
four
know,
minutes after he's in the portal.
So you know the agent, and you know the school, and you know, like, you just connect the dots. There's a reason why in the transfer portal there's that do not contact that you can flag, because you know exactly where you're going to go. How do you know that if you just entered the transfer portal? I know, because you were already contacted. Mm-hmm. Somebody already tampered. You know exactly where you're going. You're just entering the portal as a formal part of the process. Like, it's all just so gross. It's just, it's brutal. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the number of guys, and I think of especially, you know, a handful of, like, guys who were starting at Georgia Tech, or, hell, Jordan Addison, or, you know, take your pick of any number of guys who were somewhat impact players, you know, maybe not the two or three best players on a given team, but, like, they transfer elsewhere, and it's Ole Miss, and it's Colorado, and it's, you know, take your pick of a handful of these programs that are notorious for this, Louisville, or it's Florida State, or it's, you know, it's whoever. And, like, did they really succeed at the new program on a comparable level to what they did at the old program? A lot of times it feels like no. So are you making this out of, you know, the best interest for, like, what you can do on the field? Or did they just offer you, you know, a couple extra bucks and you chase that? And
right.
I'm not here to judge. You know, if I were in that position, what would I do? I don't know. You know, I could act like I have, like I really place value on, you know, the school part and the degree part and all that. But, you know, you're talking about a number of these guys probably making more money to play football for a year at a college than I currently make in my job 10 years into my career. So, like, at that point, you know, again, who am I to judge? Like, that's a different decision to make. And I can say what I would do now, but until somebody waves that check in your face, you don't know what you're going to do.
Right.
So,
right. That was the same. It's the live golf conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
100%
ethics and morals. And yeah, but you have also never had a blank check in front of you, essentially being like, name your price. And like, oh, okay, if somebody offered me $500 million to play golf, like, 10 times a year...
You think you could ignore the spirit of competition for that amount of money,
Mike? Oh, man, there's not as many fans here as there is at, like, the Honda Classic. Bummer. I guess I'll just go home and, with my $500 million...
cry into all that money.
Yeah,
and still, like, play the Masters every year, you know,
and, like, still play, right, yeah, and still play in the four majors. Like, that's what I'm saying, right? So until you, like, see that money, until you see that NIL deal, who are we to judge? We don't have to like it as fans, but as a player, I can understand why that would be attractive to you. And let's face it, there are a lot of players who have come out and said, look, this is money like my family has never seen before. Like, I've come from a tough background. I've come from a broken household. And they've come out and they have said that the reason why they've gone to a particular school is because of an NIL deal that they could not refuse. Mm-hmm. Players are on the record saying that. And I get it. Like, I understand. I get it. And that's why I think NIL is a good thing. I don't think the pay-for-play tampering aspect's a good thing, but I think NIL is a really, really good thing for those types of stories. And though that's happening a lot in the sport, and I think that is a good thing. And I think the transfer portal is a good thing. And I feel like if we put some guardrails around some of this stuff, it would be a really, really good thing. But we can't have nice things. The NCAA had to sit on their hands for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Congress had to get involved. That's always going to be a losing proposition. Like, you thought television execs were bad. Let's get Congress in here and see if they can make some decisions about college athletics. So it's just been mismanaged, mishandled for years. We've seen it coming. It's been festering since a few years before the beginning of this podcast, and we've been doing this almost a decade now, Joey. Like, we saw this coming, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We've been rambling tonight, but that's where we're at.
That's what happens when you don't record for 6 weeks, is that we got a lot of things to get off our chests here.
Yes.
As you said, Mike, I don't blame the players for trying to do what's right for them. I don't pretend to know what is right for them. I don't blame the programs for trying to use the rules to come up with the best teams, the best programs that they can come up with. I blame the people that created an environment where you can do all this stuff the way that it's been done, and that degrades the fan experience day over day, week over week, month over month, year over year. That's who I blame. It's the administrators, it's the conference commissioners, it's the TV execs who, and something that you said earlier of the TV execs, that they don't understand this sport. They understand numbers. They understand line goes up. They understand, you know, you put this helmet against this helmet, and you get good ratings. That might be true, but I don't think you understand this sport at its core and what really makes it special and unique and the thing that we really love. And without that understanding, you're going to make these wildly dangerous decisions that result in hemorrhaging fans year over year. You'll get the casual viewers, sure, but there's a lot of us that are more the hardcore fans that are going to leave year over year, and that's what you get. So
yeah,
but congrats on your better ratings for, you know, Oregon and Michigan in October or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we'll watch it.
I'm a topic sucker, Mike. Of course I'll watch it.
A topic for a later podcast is, I'm going to just float this topic on the air now, and somebody in the comments will hold us to it next time we go live.
See, it's already late. We can just do a later podcast. Never mind.
What if this is... Yeah, man. And me feeding my fussy son breakfast will not go particularly well for anybody involved, including me.
He said that.
What if he's the greatest? What if this is all cyclical?
You mean like if the super conference has to break into smaller regional divisions that specifically play each other and have their own little championships that they play?
We have been doing a pod. We know each other very well. What if we just end up back in conferences?
You're telling me you saw that tweet that I had like 3-4 weeks ago?
Oh, man. We are back to conferences. Wait, Washington and Oregon, and they're just like, we're really just kind of a two-team conference? We should expand.
They should be aligned with USC and UCLA, I think. I think those four should play each other every year. And if they're going to do that, I mean, Arizona and Arizona State are all pretty close. And, like, Utah's on the way.
Yeah.
And that matter, so is Stanford and Cal.
Why are they in the Big 12 and the ACC pods?
I don't know. I think what we're talking about would make more sense.
Yeah. Oh, like conferences? What if this is all cyclical?
It's nothing like conferences, Mike. It's nothing like conferences.
Right. It'll be branded differently, and they'll hit up fans for more money.
CFB West.
Right. Please support us as we embark on our new journey in the CFB West. Yeah. Oh, you mean the Pac 6, the Pac 8, the Pac 10, the Pac 12? Like, we're back.
Yeah. Imagine that.
George Kliavkov comes back in.
I had this idea before. It's like, yeah, well, you were really bad at it, George.
Yeah.
Mike, that's all I got. Anything else?
I have an Apple TV deal this time. I don't have anything else.
How'd that go the first time, George?
Yeah, right.
Let's get out of here. We should probably come and record again
soon.
In less than 6 weeks.
Yeah, soon. We should continue our State of the Program series now that we're like in spring practice. I think that's makes sense.
We should do that. Yeah, we're close to the end of basketball season, so we'll stop confusing all of our beat writers on which one are we trying to talk about. So that'll be really helpful as well. Shout out to NC State, still dancing.
Two teams.
We record this.
Men's and women's.
Yeah. Yeah, men's and women's. Everyone knew the garbage ACC basketball conference was going to produce a Final Four team, and it was going to be 11 seed NC State, who was definitely going to make the tournament if not for winning the ACC tournament, which was fun. So, anyways, go Pack. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you know, after the national title game, they have won it, and go ACC to that.
Yep, that would be something.
Let's come back soon, Mike. Until then, you can find us on Twitter at FTRSJoey, at Mike McDaniel SI, at BC Podcast ACC. Send us an email, questions, comments, concerns, the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
This is the time of year that if you have something you want us to talk about, high chance it's going to get talked about. So,
yes, very high chance.
Hit us up with that. Once again, email or DM on Twitter or whatever you got to do, hit us up. We will try to make that happen. Mike, iTunes, Spotify, you know, whatever the kids are calling it these days. I'm a little bit rusty here trying to remember what we talked about in the outro. But yeah, good place you go find your podcast. Go find us there.
Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference, rate, review, find all of our podcasts there because we've been posting in there. I know we have, I think.
6 weeks ago, maybe.
Shout out Homefield, Section 103 for the sponsorships. Mm-hmm.
Promo code GOACC.
Maybe we'll get BetUS back in the fold.
Unlikely.
I agree. They're trying to pay me in Dogecoin. So.
No further comment. Okay. Mike, anything else before we get out of here?
BetUS is still on the table. Get on our Zoom meeting.
According to that email we got a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's on the table. We might have to join that call just to see.
I'm sure there's a lot of people from BetUS listening to this show right now. So if you are listening, email us one more time and then we'll talk.
What's your marketing department looking like these days?
No comment there either.
I think we'll leave that alone.
Definitely leaving that alone. Mike, you want to come back and record again sometime in the next less than 6 weeks?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's do it. Shout out to the folks that joined us tonight live. We went live on youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. We were live on Twitter, at BC Podcast ACC, live on Facebook. So appreciate the folks who joined us in the comments and joined in on the fun. Hope to see you guys next time if you were not here tonight. Or even if you were here tonight, we hope to see you next time too. So appreciate it. Mike, we'll talk again soon. Until then, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. We promise. Until next time, go Pack, go win that national championship, and go ACC.